This is exactly right.
Forgive me for interrupting. I'm Bridger Weiniger, host of I Said No Gifts on Exactly Right. Each week, I invite my favorite people in comedy over to chat, and they always bring a gift. We're coming up on our 200th episode, and every episode is a gem. I have welcomed all kinds of great guests, including Cola Scola, Bowen Yang, Robbie Hoffman. It goes on and on and on. And you don't want to miss the 200th episode with the great Maria Bamford. What does she bring me? Find out April 25th. New episodes every Thursday. Follow I Said No Gifts wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Do You Need a Ride? This is Chris Fairbanks.
This is Karen Kilgariff.
I'm a little out of breath, and I just want to let you guys know I'm happy to see you, and it's nice to have friends.
Isn't it?
I'm having a falling down type day.
Uh-oh.
Everything, planes, trains, and automobiles, just the mishaps, my...
Seatbelt, please.
Yes, of course. If not for the chiming alone, and then safety. My car didn't work, and I charged the battery, and then it died while I was driving, so I abandoned it and went with an almost dead phone to my audition, and I was with a difficult child actor that insisted on improvising about Smucker's Jam.
No.
And he didn't have the talent. He just had... confidence.
The gumption.
And he took a half hour of my life that was stolen by a child. And then I was put in the car of a Lyft driver who was a total lunatic. But it's all over now.
It is. And simultaneous to that, Stephen met me at my house, was waiting on the doorstep because my family is at my house. We went to the grocery store to get groceries for tonight's dinner with my cousin. And then I said, guys, I have to leave and go podcast for about probably what will end up being 4 hours.
And
then we got on the freeway, I was like, this is golden. We're going to get there. The timing is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the traffic stopped and it rolled for so long. Then we made the call. We're getting Tig. She's waiting. She's been waiting for 30 minutes probably already.
I thought I was going to break the news that she wasn't. Unfortunately unavailable. I was waiting to reveal it once I got in the car. Tig is sitting behind me, if I'm not mistaken.
It's true. Our guest today is comedian, producer, director, automaton. What's the word? Auteur.
Auteur.
Tig Notaro.
Auteur.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I do need a ride.
I wish there was a need.
You really did need a ride.
Yeah, I did need a ride. Kind of at this point.
I'm so... And we're taking you to the Ace Theater or to your home?
Well, I need to go home.
Yes.
I have little babies waiting to see me and to say goodnight. And then I was hoping to shower, that maybe I can look at myself and make myself believe that I look clean. Head out to the Ace Theater downtown, drop off some jokes, head back home.
You're just giving him an envelope with handwritten jokes?
Yes, that's what I always do.
Perfect, yeah. Perfect.
And then just have a dictator dictate it.
Yep.
An actual dictator.
An actual one.
Maybe Gaddafi?
Yeah, he's my favorite. When it comes to reading out my thoughts, Gaddafi really knows how to do it.
One of the best dictators around.
He's the go-to dictator.
He really is the best. Okay. Last time we podcasted, I was so excited about the episode, and it sounded like bumblebees on top of some sort of an electrical power box.
Yeah.
With moments of what sounded
was
like human.
Was it my episode?
It was your episode.
Last time you podcasted.
It was your episode, and it went, I remember how well it went.
It was beautiful.
We all said poignant things, or you two did, and tears were shed. Points were made, and they were brought back to a wonderful, funny moment. And I can't believe we get the chance to do it again today.
We're going
to
recapture.
And we're going to muffle this one, too.
Oh, yeah. God, and the sound quality.
And when should we let the bumblebees out?
So that was you. I knew it was you.
Yeah.
Just bumblebeeing around back there.
I wish there was a word for thank you and... sorry, and I'm happy to see you, but I'm just going to say all those things individually. Thank you for picking me up. And Tig, thank you for being on.
Hey, thanks for picking me up.
And where were you? You were in North Carolina?
I was not. Why do you think I was in North Carolina?
I don't know. That's in my head.
New York City.
Oh, you said...
NYC?
NYC, and I took out the Y and just made it North Carolina.
Yeah. Yeah, I was in NYC. I did Colbert last night.
How'd it go?
It was fun. And then I went to... days before that, I was in somewhere in Massachusetts, and I was doing live from here. It used to be Prairie Home Companion.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So...
And at no point were you in North Carolina?
I mean, I have been in my life.
Of course. Just
not on this particular trip.
I hear it's nice, that state.
It's beautiful. Oh,
yeah. I love it.
The apps.
But yeah, I was out there. I have a silly online talk show, and I was in New York promoting.
Have you shot any of these episodes yet?
Yep, and they're trickling out.
They're in the can?
What's it called?
No, they're out.
Oh.
They're out.
It's
called Under a Rock with Tig Notaro.
Because Tig doesn't know anything about the guests. Or did they pick? Explain.
Please explain.
Well, I don't follow pop culture.
I know this about you.
Yeah. It's people really don't believe the extent that I'm talking about. And they think I'm trying to be one of those people that's like, yeah, I don't watch.
I don't even own a TV.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I own a TV. It's just dusty. There's a very famous quote that my wife repeats when she had me turn the TV on to watch something. She said, now get the small one and press the whatever button, and then the medium one, and then press this button, and then the other remote and press that button. And I said, I truly said, three remotes for one show? I think in that exact inflection. And so anytime the TV is turned on, Stephanie repeats, three remotes for one show?
Can you do it a little more Don Knotts?
I naturally go into Don Knotts.
I know
surprise
you do.
People. See, Chris knows me well because we almost lived together for a decade.
We were almost recognized by the state, if I'm not.
Everyone recognized it but us.
You guys were in denial.
Yeah.
Everyone that at least worked for the city recognized us all the time.
Yeah. But yeah, so Chris and I lived together for almost a decade, and he can sit here and tell you I follow music, I love documentaries, but I just really don't follow much else. And obviously, I know who some famous people are.
Of course.
Of course.
You got my Pitbull reference when we were making text
I actually
jokes.
Like Pitbull.
Great.
I'm a music person. But anyway... there are just famous people I happen to know. There are people I've worked with. There's people I've socialized with. So it's not that I don't know who any famous people are, but there's a surprising amount.
Well, if it gets into, like I did trivia when I was back home in Montana and there was a music round and I thought, oh, I'm going to know all of this, except it was current music and I don't know any pop music references or anyone's name.
Yeah, I'm probably not great at today's pop.
Yeah.
I found out who Ariana Grande was about 6 months ago.
I was just going to mention, she's top 1 through 10 songs are always Ariana Grande.
If you played her for me, I know I wouldn't know who she was.
Did you get the chance to interview her?
No, but they tried to track her down. And what they do on my show is they put together what they call face sheets, and they just show me hundreds of famous faces, and then they'll throw in like a few random people that aren't famous, and then I just go through and I say yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, and then anyone I don't recognize, then they reach out to their reps. And then there's a list of reps that say, don't ever contact us again.
How dare you?
Because they get a call of Tig doesn't know who your client is.
And it's going to be so fun.
Hear us out.
And so, yeah, the talk show is essentially me face to face with somebody and I interview them and try and figure out who they are.
Beautiful.
And then, so if people come on the show, they clearly have a sense of humor about it.
Yes, right. I was just going to say.
And so everybody's been really, really nice and fun. And it's, and I'm making it sound like it's an everyday talk show. It's six episodes right now. And
it's the Funny or Die people, is it?
It's Funny or Die. And then the money comes from Alexa. So Alexa is on the show, and I have to mention her or talk to her once or twice in an episode.
Is Alexa your sidekick, kind of?
Kind of, but not really. I mean, nobody really... You wouldn't go, oh, it's that show with Alexa. You
no. know,
that's good.
Like, every now and then I might say, oh, let's get a timer. Alexa, can you count to 10 for me? And then that kind of thing.
It's a light integration.
Yeah, it's a very light integration.
Nice.
And then...
And who have you had so far that you didn't know?
Can you reveal?
Well, yeah, we've released three episodes so far.
Okay.
One of them I did figure out, and it's because he was a musician. But the first one was James Vanderbeek.
Sure.
Oh.
Do you know who he is?
Yes.
From Friday Night.
From Dawson's Creek.
Dawson's Creek. And I think
Friday Night Creeks.
Friday Night Lights Creek. There's some football thing he was in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then
Varsity Blues.
In the new FX show, Pose.
Oh, is he in that?
Yeah.
I just started watching the first episode.
Okay.
Really good.
And what's fun is at the end of every episode, that's when I reveal who it is and I give all their credit. So it kind of, after I destroy their egos.
You're like, oh, you're in that?
Well, truly, I go, my guest today is a three-time Emmy Award winner, two-time Oscar nominee. No, but, you know, it's that kind of thing where yeah. I'm laughing at myself going, I am so
that's the best.
It's fun.
It's such a perfect show for you because I can see you calmly working through that. And
well, they give me clues,
yeah.
Which is fun. And yeah, anyway, so I was in New York promoting that. And
just as someone who's worked on talk shows...
Mm-hmm. That's right. You have quite a history of talk shows.
And, you know, I don't want to brag about how much I've worked on talk shows, but that the way you find out if someone's a bad talk show guest is at the end, they produce it through, and when you find out how seriously someone takes themselves and how much they won't do and won't play and won't and think that their image is who they are.
Yeah.
So usually that bad news comes at the end, but you get it. You don't have to deal with those people because they would never be subjected to that, you know, idea of not being known. It's like the best sense of humor people you're getting. That's what makes a good talk show.
Yeah. Did it make people act more human, knowing that they were going into this kind of joke scenario?
I think so. I think they were, there were definitely a few moments where people said, gosh, every actor should come on this show. and also that it creates real conversations because I really am off guard. I don't know who... I'm talking to.
And you're not like blowing smoke or doing any of the usual stuff that like...
No.
Yeah, because you can't.
I can't. I mean, I'm truly looking at this person because they could be a sports figure. They could be a newscaster. They could be a politician. I don't know. It could be anybody.
That's so good.
It could be a musician. And one of them was Wyclef. And
wow.
I figured out that it was Wyclef.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Was that, now at that moment on the show, does that feel like a victory for both of you? Did he like that you finally figured him out?
I'm sure he liked it. Yeah. I was kind of on to him pretty quickly because he said he was from Haiti and then he kind of sang a line and I said, ugh, I'm on to you. I know who you are.
I'll be gone till November.
But so that was fun and that's what we talked about with the show, just having that openness of it'll be fun if I don't know them or if I figure it out. If
yes.
they start to look familiar to me and I'm like, oh. Because a lot of times when I would look at a face sheet and I would say, I don't know this person, the producers would be like, hold on a minute. Look at this again. And I'd say, okay. And then they'd pull up other pictures and different angles. And I'd say, I don't know who that person is.
But what about in this lighting? Yeah. Is it a lighting issue?
But what about if you look at them through my eyes?
Have you tried squinting? Use my glasses.
But, yeah, so it's a fun moment, I think. It only happened once. It was just with Wyclef.
I love it.
Who's
I
think the third person?
Such a great idea.
Her name is... Julie Bowen, she's the mom.
Yes, you a Modern Family.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
She's on one of the biggest television
well,
shows.
Well, that was the thing is when I was reading her thing, it was like they're going into their 13th and final season. And she has won 3 Emmys. And I thought one of the clues, the guest gives me clues about themselves and then I give them props or something for them to do. And one of the things I gave her was a dry erase board. And I said, draw yourself at work. Mm. And so she drew herself sitting on a couch. And so that made me think she was a talk show host.
Right, of course.
So I was like, I was on that trail. And
this is the best idea. This is the best idea of a show. I'm sorry. It's so good.
And then I think it's the clip that they used to promote this episode, but there's a moment where, and I truly, it seems like a joke, especially knowing who she is, but I thought I was so on this trail that I said, wait, because she said something about being a mom. She's famous for being a mom. At first I said, oh, I think you're an actor. And then when she drew herself on the couch, I was like, wait a minute, are you a talk show host?
Are you just a stay-at-home mom?
Yeah. Why do I have to talk to you?
I'm a couch potato mom.
But then I was convinced she had her own podcast. Mm. That's what it was. I said, do you have a podcast? And then that's a clip that's used to promote the episode. And it looks like, I'm sure it looks like I'm full of it.
Oh, that's so funny.
I will just say this, and I know that you know this about that show, but I once TiVo'd Modern Family because my sister and my niece watch it constantly. So when I go home to visit my family, I start watching it. And then it's like this weird habit where then I kind of need it. Like it's like, oh, it's 7 o'clock. I need to get this because they have such good jokes. I mean, it's a very, very, very well-written show. So it's really satisfying and there's such good actors on it. But so when I came home from a trip at home, I DVR'd it so that I could watch it and it filled up my DVR. That's how many times a day that show is on.
Really?
Yes. It's like, it's almost like if you tape The Simpsons where you just keep on getting it endlessly. It's been on that much and it's in reruns that much.
She's got some cash.
Yes,
she's not broke.
She's not worried about anything.
She doesn't have a struggling mom podcast.
Not at all. She's not trying to make ends meet.
I love your two children. I love you and I love your two children. And anytime I've been there, they just inherently know it's time to wrestle. Or are they always wrestling? Is it?
Well, usually right around bedtime. I mean, there's several wrestling matches that happen throughout the day, but about an hour before night-night, it really starts to kick in.
Always by the china.
Yeah, truly.
I love it. And we'll pin each other's heads on the ground, and it sounds painful. It's the bonking noise of a head hitting a wooden floor, and they just start giggling. They love it.
Oh,
my
and
son
they're
Finn,
twins?
Yeah, they're fraternal twins, and my son Finn, the rougher it gets, the harder he laughs, and he's the tinier one.
I love it. That's what I've experienced. It's so fun to watch. I could watch it all day.
I know. Chris really does enjoy it. When they were just little blobby infants, Chris came over and they all three had a wrestling match on the floor. It was really cute.
As infants.
Yeah.
They were just trying to figure out how to get my clothes off.
Aww.
This is a button. What is under here?
Let's get this off.
And maybe it's a weird thing to mention, but I loved every minute of it. It was so cute.
They're still not great at clothes. I mean, both legs will go in one pant hole.
They wake every morning like you and I and put both legs in one pant hole like the next guy.
Yeah.
Stephanie sent me a picture of Finn. He put on two different shoes and he came in and said, "Look at my funny shoes," and laughed so hard. We're afraid that we might have raised terrible senses of humor.
And are you done shooting Star Trek? Or is it still going?
I finished season two and then that aired. And then I go back and start filming season three, end of July.
And where do you shoot it?
Toronto.
Oh, wow.
That's great.
I was lured back season three and was told that a chunk of the new season was going to be in Iceland.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh,
yes.
So excited. And I haven't heard about Iceland ever again.
Do you think they lied to your face?
And I've said this before, but Iceland
and behind my back.
Is green and Greenland is icy.
Iceland. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. That's, I've said it before. There's only a handful of things I know.
And that's one for sure.
That's definitely one.
I actually know about five things about Iceland because that was the country I had to do my sixth grade country report on because I was picked last, second to last. And everybody, the person that got picked first, of course, picked Italy. Second person picked France, what have you. Ireland, of course, was way up there. Then it just kept going down through all the countries. And I was second to last. I picked Iceland, and my friend Holly was last, and she got Malta. And it was impossible to do reports on these countries because there was like, you know, one paragraph in the encyclopedia. And now, my country that it's, you know, Reykjavik's the capital.
Sure.
of course.
The main export is herring. I don't actually know that much, but.
Some kind of canned fish.
It's just so weird that I used to be the only one that gave a shit about Iceland and now it's the place.
And now all of a sudden I do.
And now all of a sudden this one jumps on board. The hell?
I have wanted to go. I've been there on a layover, which was pretty fun just knowing I was there. But I'm hoping to go back and have more fun than a layover.
Yeah.
And hopefully bump into Bjork.
Bjork.
She runs her own spa there.
In a swan suit.
Everybody has to wear a bird suit of some kind at their spa. It's relaxing.
That role was written for you, right? Tig, you didn't audition for that. Someone that loves you wrote that.
Yeah, my friend created the new series and he created this role for me, and I thought I was just going out to do an episode, and then I really did a terrible job and people think that I am being, you know, humble and hard on myself or whatever you want to say, but I have a hard time memorizing lines in mm-hmm. general. And to memorize Star Trek lines, it's truly nearly impossible for me.
It's a bunch of made up words, right?
Yeah, it's made up words about made up science, about made up outer space. And so I can't even picture what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Whereas in a movie or TV show, I can picture, "Good to see you. We'll meet up with you at dinner tonight." Like, all of that makes sense.
Yeah, those are real words.
Yeah, and I can picture the little story I'm saying. But with Star Trek,
it's all quirks.
It is really impossible. And I was in the middle of this scene, and I was trying so hard. I was trying. I couldn't get it. And then I finally went, "I'm sorry. What are we doing? What am I talking about? I don't know any of these words. I've tried to learn them." And I was just having this spiral, laughing so hard. I wasn't like really having a spiral, but I was truly like, okay, I can't pretend any longer that this isn't the most ridiculous thing. I can't. I'm sorry. I'm ruining your show. And
there's just a bunch of straight-faced Vulcans
people
with pointy
in
ears.
Suits. Yeah,
yeah.
They're
like, wait. Oh, do you have to wear a bodysuit? Basically,
I'm in a like a tight spacesuit.
Yeah.
But I'm not like a monster or anything.
But you do
an
have
alien.
To like,
see, I'm not even.
It's not monster.
I'm not a monster.
I knew that coming into the car.
But the director came out of Video Village, and you know where they are behind the scenes watching everything. And she was so nice, and she just said, oh, not a problem, and pulled up an apple box, sat down, and just started feeding me all of my lines.
Really?
Yeah. And all of the cast, if they hated me, they didn't show it. They were all very kind and patient, and I kept saying, thank you, I'm so sorry. I truly tried, and I tried to learn my words, and I'm so sorry. And so I wrote my friend, Alex Kurtzman. I mean, he's so gigantic. He's written Star Trek movies. He's written Mission Impossible movies.
Wow.
He's written, you know, everything gigantic. And I just wrote him and I said, I just did a terrible job on your show. And I want you to know that the meeting that we had in your office in Santa Monica, where you said, we want to use you as much as you're available, I don't want you to feel like you need to stick to that just because you said that to me. And I really, really don't want to ruin your show. And I'm so sorry. And he wrote me saying, he was telling me that the show essentially edits right there on the set.
Oh.
They do a rough, like, line cut right there.
Wow.
And he said, I've seen the footage. He goes, it all cut together well, and nobody would know you're being fed all your lines. And he said, and you're not getting out of this. And he said, and from here on out, I'm going to make your dialogue even harder. Because it amuses me to know that you're struggling so hard.
Oh, no.
So now I'm stuck on Star Trek.
Yes.
Yeah.
At basically playing yourself, right?
Yeah, it's Tig in space.
That's Tig's in space.
In tight, tight clothes.
In skin tight clothes. But so when funny. I say I'm stuck on Star Trek, I really love it. And I feel lucky and thankful. And it's just when you can work with nice people, it's never a bad time.
Well, and also if you can get your mind around lines like this, mm-hmm. then you can do anything after that. If you can make
the
things work. Well, because I did a show in England and I'd never had like a big part before. So uh-huh. this was like my first big thing, and it was this ensemble and it had these unbelievable British actors. So it was the Hound from Game of Thrones, okay. Rory McCann, and this woman, Michelle Gomez.
All people that you wouldn't finger in a lineup.
They all went to like the Royal Shakespeare Academy for acting. Mm-hmm. This guy, I mean, everybody was an incredible actor.
Yep.
And by the way, that's like Star Trek. They're all, what is it? Juilliard, they're Broadway
yes.
people.
Yeah. Right.
They're all that. And I'm like, I'm going to be in this scene too.
I know, where like lines uh-huh. aren't an issue in any, lines don't come into it at all.
No.
It's not even about that.
No.
And I had the same thing where the first rehearsal we had, the director, I was saying my lines. She goes, I need to stop you, Karen. You're making that noise. And I go, what's this? Sorry. She goes, you're doing that American actress exhale. So I would say a line because of course my character was like bitchy. And so I go like, that's not even, and I was doing this exhale that I didn't know I was doing. So then that's all I could think about. And then when I would go to do the lines, I couldn't memorize my lines because all I was ever doing was going, I shouldn't have this part. I shouldn't. I make noises. I do American things.
Yeah.
And it was every time, every time we'd be on set, it would be my turn. And then I'd just be like, oh, fuck. It was so much.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Just your American patriotism takes over.
It was fucking horrible. It was awful.
I can't imagine. Yeah, that brings me anxiety just hearing about it.
It was, I love acting, but that part, the technical aspect of it is so much harder, I think, than so many people understand.
And it makes me think of when Zach first asked Martha to be on Baskets, she said, I don't want to be the Jar Jar Binks of your show. She was so scared to ruin it. And it was the same thing. Just be Martha.
Jar Jar.
Just be Martha in space.
Yeah.
Very proud of you, Tig.
I'm proud of you, Christopher.
Oh, thank you.
And Karen. And
thank you.
You too, for that matter.
Hey,
this has become
spread it around.
Supportive
yeah.
car ride.
I'm not ashamed of anyone in this whole car.
Yeah, I'm not embarrassed to be seen right now.
Uh-uh. Tay, can you think of one of your lines? Give us an example.
Well, yeah, the one that I really remember, it, and it's not even that crazy, but it was one of the first things I had to memorize. And it, I was also talking to myself in my bedroom. And when Stephanie walked in, she was kind of, you know, quietly coming in and out of the room doing things. And I was in there doing my Star Trek stuff. And she started laughing so hard because I was like, what happens is my character, I'm an engineer, but I'm really smart and I'm doing medical stuff and trying to keep all these people alive. And I don't realize that the war has ended and I'm stranded with all these, you know, creatures and people. And then the Star Trek, actual stars of the show come upon me in this, moment. And I have like creatures plugged into things and, you know, just keeping everyone alive after the crash. And so somebody tells me that the war is over, and I turn to one of the creatures who's plugged into a blood pump of some sort.
Sure, a blood pump, yeah.
And I say, hear that, Valentine? The war's over. We're going home. And then I turn back to the cast and I go, Valentine took a piece of shrapnel to the left aortic valve. Had to, I can't remember.
It rings a bell, though. I think I saw that clip.
Yeah.
Was it one of the first episodes?
Yeah, it was the first episode.
I think they used that in promo.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because I watched a lot of it. I went down a YouTube spiral.
Are you a Star Trek fan?
I mean, more so than Star Wars, I think, even though I spent more time with Star, it was easier to have access to Star Wars, I think, mm-hmm. when I was a kid, because...
Well, you know, it's funny, and I told you
this... It was on VHS in my collection.
Chris, one of the episodes I did on Star Trek, there was a huge cocoon, and Chris had made a joke online, I think, or a tweet.
How do you remember
something.
That?
Well, I think your tweets went through Facebook, because I'm not on Twitter, but the tweet, I think, went through your Facebook account, and I saw it, and I thought it was the funniest thing I'd ever read in my life. Chris said that no matter what, I can't remember how you said it, but essentially no matter what, on any science fiction movie or TV show, there's always a cocoon.
Yeah.
And that somebody always says, when they see it or come upon it, they always say, no, it looks like some sort of cocoon. That made me laugh so hard. And then here I was on Star Trek on a sci-fi show, and day one, there's a cocoon there.
Which
and I told everyone in the cast, and they were laughing so hard.
Does that mean that somebody on the ship had to have come from the cocoon?
Somebody ended up in a cocoon, and
okay,
when she clawed her way out,
ew.
And she's from Juilliard.
Yeah, of course.
And
sure.
And when
she took a whole cocoon class, I bet.
Yeah.
Crawled out of that cocoon. I was so impressed by her because I was laughing that I was having to act with a cocoon. And because there's a point where we rip the cocoon open, and me and this guy, Anthony, have to scream into the empty cocoon and yell, no! And I kept kind of laughing because, you know, I don't really identify as an actor. So to me, I'm just like, why are we yelling into this empty cocoon? And he's over there, you know, he's from the original cast of Rent, and he's yes. this real talent.
It's a redheaded guy?
Well, it's blonde. It's white. Blonde.
Little glasses?
Anthony Rapp.
Yes, yes, yes.
So yeah, he's this really great actor, very, mm-hmm. very experienced, talented man. And he's really yelling no. And I'm...
That's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, of course. That's what I was hired to do.
But turns out.
He and I ripped this cocoon open, and I'm trying desperately to not laugh, because the camera's in the cocoon in my face. And so we rip it open. I'm like, okay, can we take that again? I'm sorry. And then so we finally got it out. And then there's another moment where she really does come out of the cocoon. You have to see the episode. But when she claws her way out of that disgusting cocoon. I told her, I was like, I didn't know what it looked like when somebody claws their way out of a cocoon.
And somehow she
and
did.
By God, I know that's what that's it must it. Look like. I was, and she was like, like, it was so good. It was so good. Mary Wiseman, and she's very funny.
That so makes good. Me think of, wait, does Mary Wiseman have red curly hair?
Yes.
She's on Baskets.
Yes.
She's one of the best people on, she's one of my favorite characters on Baskets.
Yes.
She's so good.
Wow. Then you might like Star Trek.
I will absolutely.
All these people are on Star Trek.
I'm a
Duff
fan
Joneses.
Of almost everybody on Star Trek. But that makes me think of at the JC taking, you know, in taking drama classes or theater classes.
Uh-huh.
And I was in a movement for theater class.
Uh-huh.
And one day they were like, and now everybody has to act like a praying mantis. And I was like, I won't do it. And I just left because uh-huh. that, I feel like that's the difference between acting and doing stand-up comedy. It's like,
yeah.
I want to perform,
yeah.
but only on my own terms.
Right.
And like, I won't do anything that I find shaming or like, that affects my pride in any way, which is, all of acting,
a lot of
I think.
Stuff.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot of cocoon-based stuff. For
I know
sure.
it was interesting because when I had my own show on Amazon, I was so disconnected from acting that when I was writing the scripts, I forgot that I was gonna have to do that stuff. And so I would get you know, in the moment it was all about writing the best show and the best scripts, and then when I got on set,
you're like, "Who
I was
wrote
like,
this?
Oh
this
my
shit?
God!
Oh, I
have
wrote.
To cry.
Yeah,
I don't have experience.
Who does that?
Yeah.
Did you ever ask Stephanie? Because Stephanie is a trained, good actor.
Yeah.
Do you read lines with her, and does she help you with that?
I do. I mainly just need help. Learning the words.
Yeah. Like,
and then once I get those down, I can kind of just pull something together. I don't have range. And usually whenever a director starts heading over to me, I always say, before you say anything, I have no range.
And this is the bad news. There's no range here.
There's no range here. But what were you going to ask me?
It was range based. I'll go back to my chair.
Wait, was there an ending to your anecdote where you were saying the thing about the aortic valve in the bedroom by yourself? Did Stephanie, when she found you, were you like?
I was mid aortic valve, and she just was like, "What are you talking about?" And I was like, this is my career. I'm doing this. And so, you know, whenever I get my new script, she always wants to hear, she wants me to run through my lines quickly just so she can have a little cackle, knowing that I'm going to have to try and remember that.
I'm always blown away by the length when it's the technical stuff like that, like playing a doctor or an engineer.
Uh-huh.
They do go into things where they're explain. It's obviously like the way you get out the, what do you call it?
Words.
The plot. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like you're the one that has to explain why the machine isn't going to go.
Right.
But it's this long.
Yeah.
I mean, that's horrifying.
Yeah.
That's my nightmare.
Am I really going to walk away from this and be like, no, I don't want to be on Star Trek?
No.
Right.
It's so fun. And it's like, how often do you get to be on an iconic series? You know, not very often. Maybe there's people out there in the world that are like, yes, I'm on another iconic series. And then good for you.
I'm Jean Smart, and I don't relate to what you're saying at all because I'm on every iconic series.
So funny to think that I just came from a Smucker's audition where I had to talk about real strawberries to a child.
What now? Can you give us an example of how that child was improvising?
Well, they were supposed to just pretend to be playing a video game as I was listing off healthy things like legumes and broccoli in the fridge. And then I finally mentioned the strawberries, and he was pretending to play a video game, but he was looking at me. And then I, in my little moment of improv, was keep your eye on the game. and he wouldn't. And then he started just talking about stuff and asking me questions. This kid was so comfortable in the room, he just was like, I'm just going to be myself. I was raised to be unshakably confident.
How old was he?
I don't believe in this script. Six.
Oh, my God.
He was a sweet little boy, but he just didn't. His mom brought him there. He didn't even want to be there, I don't think.
He's sure. been in the business for 5 years.
Yeah, he was the Gerber baby at one point. And
he has an agent and a manager.
It's just so funny.
He's gone through several agents and managers, just firing them left and right.
He went to Juilliard Daycare.
Juilliard Preschool.
He was a sweet little kid. And so I just ended up talking to him. And I was so late because of it, but I had to pretend like I was relaxed and a cool dad.
Uh-huh.
I gotta shave this mustache and then I'll quit going out for dads. But I think I'd be a good dad for a just
I like your mustache.
Well, thank you.
Can you grow a beard?
I can't.
Okay.
No, oh. There's patches of baldness on the sides of my face.
Me too.
Not me.
I try. I have patches. You can grow a full beard here?
I think I can. And these days, there's lots of white whisker situations where I'm just like, this is... They're
a welcome surprise.
This is a dream come true. I've got to get back to England.
Boink.
You know how you pull a whisker out of your chin and actually it makes you sick to your stomach because it was so
or it
large.
Pulls you a little bit.
Yes. It pulls you forward toward the mirror. Ow!
Yeah. No. No.
No, that's never happened to me.
No. Unfamiliar.
I like this guy in the shorts.
Oh,
yeah. Hey. That guy in the shorts is just guarding a porta potty.
Yeah.
Maybe his pants are your pants in that porta potty?
Excuse me. What are you doing in that porta potty?
I wish I had legs like him.
Why?
I don't know. They were just muscular. Mine are just literal walking sticks. Little to no muscle tone.
How's your hip?
Feels great.
Really?
Yeah. I think it's 100% when it comes to things like climbing stairs or bicycling.
And what sort of problems are you having?
Well, it's when it needs to be more technical, like with skateboarding, or if I were a soccer player, which I'm not, but I am skateboarding, so I don't know why I mentioned soccer. It's the side kick and the little quick twitch muscle things. It's uh-huh. like my leg is possessed and I don't have full control over it like I used to.
But like... you're not 100%. Obviously, you got the little twitch problems.
Yes.
Where are you percentage-wise?
It depends on what I'm doing.
Okay.
At your worst. At my best, I could run and probably still run as fast as I could 2 years before surgery.
Wow.
But if it came to like any technical finesse, like foot movements, where I know, like with skateboarding, you have to be able to kick a certain direction to make the board do a certain trick. And my legs forgot how to do that. My brain is sending the message, but it's like someone else is controlling my leg from a remote control.
Oh.
Hidden somewhere behind
now,
a bush.
Do you think, could this be a message from God saying stop skateboarding?
Maybe. And there's been plenty of messages from the Lord.
Right.
Telling me.
He's got a lot to say to you.
Yes.
About your whole body.
He's always talking to me about my torso mostly. There's always a message from God.
Let's focus right here.
Yeah.
Right
this is God
area.
Again. Why do your tits jiggle when you drive? Leave me alone, God.
I love that joke.
You drive.
But no, it's... I'm going to ignore God on this one. I want a skateboard.
It's a mistake.
It's what I've always wanted to do, and I know other people that do it, and they're older than me.
I didn't mean to make you defensive.
It's okay. I'm sorry I'm raising my voice.
Stop hitting me.
I can't.
Stop hitting me.
Stop hitting me.
How did you two meet?
You don't think it's working out?
We've been married for over 18 years. I think it was through Greg Barrett.
Yes.
At a party at my house, right?
Yes. And then I also worked with your ex-husband.
Oh, yes, that's right.
He was a camera guy at Fuel.
Right. And I kind of knew Chris through stand-up.
Uh-huh.
And then
Yeah, when I first moved here and stayed on Howard Kramer's couch and didn't bring anything except for a pair of underwear and a skateboard, I just thought he would drive me around. Like, I came to Los Angeles not realizing what a huge city it was and what a burden I was going to be. Well, yeah, I'm just staying for a week on your couch, and I assume you'll take me to all the shows. But we did some show in a laundromat, and that's where I first met you.
Oh, right.
How did I meet you, Karen, I wonder?
Huh. Was it, like, at a Largo show?
I don't know.
That's, I mean, I'm trying to remember now.
Oh, I know. We were at Bummershoot.
Really?
Yeah. We were in the lobby of the hotel where we were staying.
Is that where we took our prom picture?
I don't remember our prom picture.
Remember when we took a picture in front of the fireplace?
Yeah, that was it. Yes. It was the fireplace in the lobby.
That's how much fun we were having because we had just met at that festival, and at one point we took a prom picture in front of the fireplace.
We fell in love.
Yes, we were truly in love.
Yeah.
Prom style.
I fell in love.
Chris and I fell in love.
Yeah,
too.
Well, I was just going to say, you beat me to the punch. That's how I know it's true. We fell in love in Boise, Idaho.
Yeah. I felt, with Karen and I fell in love in Seattle.
That's right. This wow. is, I feel like this is how it is for all comics. This is why comics, like, are best friends, and then they'll
you don't
be like.
Fall in love with all comics.
No, not all. Definitely not like, yeah. Oh, wait. Is this right?
Yeah, and then you make a.
Wonderful.
Eventually it'll all be right.
Okay, cool.
When I get home.
Cool.
So comics fall in love.
Yes.
And then I think it's like, it's that thing where, you know, for me, it's like I spent my life being the weird one that had weird ideas and yeah. said weird things.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden meeting people that did the exact same thing
yeah.
and better was like, don't leave me. I've been alone for so long. It's right. always that feeling.
Yeah. I've always been in a constant search for people that said, you're funny, not you're weird.
Yes.
Like when I was a kid, I would try so hard to make people laugh, and they would laugh, and then they'd say,
you're weird.
You're so weird.
Yeah.
And I'm like, don't you realize
that's a conversation stopper.
Insult.
Yes.
It's such an insult.
But also it's like that person is saying, I'm stupid. To me, I always interpret that as like, don't bother with me. I don't get it. Because it's just like, if you're not loving this,
yeah.
you've got to be out of your mind.
You won't love me at my best.
It is a bizarre thing because I'm sure you've probably gathered I'm a gay person.
Oh yeah.
And but before I when I realized that about myself, it was like, oh, well there you go. That makes sense.
Yeah.
But wasn't quite as when I join the comedy world.
Yeah.
That was more where I was like, oh, okay. All right. And
like your tribe, that feeling.
Yeah. I mean, not to say gay people aren't my tribe, but it was I was for sure more in the comedy clubs more than I was in the gay clubs.
Well, I feel like the gay thing is like a much larger sect, and then the comedy group is just a subset.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and then you find your gay people in there, and you find your Chris Fairbanks mustaches running around, and you find your prom date.
Your prom date's in front of the fireplace.
By the fireplace.
Yeah, we did. We knew each other 2 days before we decided we were going
to
live together. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Truly. Like, this has to happen.
I was getting this house in Venice, and Chris was going through a breakup.
Yep.
And it was a one-bedroom house, but there was this extra room that had a door that
I love that
shut.
Room. Thank you for letting me have that room.
Sure.
I had my own little French doors where I could just let in cats and chipmunks.
And he did. But yeah, I was like, oh, you broke up? Well, because we'd been laughing till we were crying the whole time we were together. And then I was like, why don't you just move in with me? I just got a house in Venice.
I was yeah. trying to get an invite to live with you when I squatted over that dog poo that was on the sidewalk and pretended it came out of me. Because I knew you'd like it.
After the show, and he was like, well, wait up. And I turned around, and he was squatting over fresh dog poop. And I was like, all right, that's it. You got to move in.
And we moved into this tiny house and put a flower in a vase and just stared at it in the corner of the room.
We're home.
Remember, we just, this is all we need right here is this vase and this flower and this porch swing.
I have told this story. That story I've told on this podcast several times, Tig, is remember there was the one year at Sarah's roof party, and which is an uncomfortable party because everyone's freaking out that famous people are there, and including the famous people.
And everyone just had an edible.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so I went, but I did not want to go, and I didn't want to subject myself to the pain I knew was coming.
Okay.
And instead, I found the two of you, and we stood next to the edge of the roof and pretended all different ways that we were going to conversationally jump off the roof in front of each other. So it was like how we were leaving the conversation.
Mid-story.
To then turn and commit suicide.
Well, gotta get out of here.
We did it for like a half an hour.
I don't even remember that good time.
It's one of my favorites.
It was the three of us?
Yeah.
Do you remember that it's...
And do you do pot drugs?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
And I didn't at the time, but I remember the peer pressure of some nice truffles being presented in a plate and Jimmy Kimmel being like, yeah, just be sure to eat half of that. Of course I'm going to eat half of it. And then I look around this party and everyone's face is sweaty and they're rubbing their face and no one can talk.
Yeah.
Like everyone was so high because the potency of these edibles.
Yeah.
And it just, you realize everyone's just human once they're high.
That's
right. They're all uncomfortable.
Everybody's just very
Gary
unhappy.
Gary Shandling rubbing his face.
Well, it's funny because I had gone to some sort of event and I came home and Stephanie asked how it went. And I said, it was good. I said, you know, I had a couple of drinks and...
You don't drink very much. You never did.
No, but I had never, and I promise you... it had never dawned on me that people drink to feel comfortable at a party. And I told Stephanie like it was this secret I had figured out.
Yeah.
I said, I'd had a couple of drinks and I could deal with the small talk and I could, I mean, it was like I was in the middle of small talk. And,
You're just describing liquid courage to her.
And she said, you didn't, and she's 15 years younger than I am. She's like, you didn't know that that's what people do?
It's almost the only reason people do it.
I never put that together. And so there's certain places where I'll show up and I'm like, all right, I'm going to have two drinks and I'm going to start asking people, where are you from? Was it raining earlier?
It's the reason that it's so hard for me now to go to parties. Like, I get invited places I want to go so bad. And because I don't drink anymore, I just sit there going, I can't do this cold. I can't walk into this place and stand around with that feeling. Even though I know people and that I have friends and all, it doesn't matter. It's like, I think I was such a drunk for so long. It was always just like slipping into the pool. It was so easy. I know. I
just remember being, there's that scene from Dumb and Dumber where Jim Carrey is he's fantasizing about what a hit he'll be at the party and he's lighting his farts and everyone's laughing and all he's doing is lighting farts and crossing his eyes. And at Sarah's party, I looked over at Tig and she's just surrounded by John Hamm and all these beautiful people laughing at, and she was dancing and farting and throwing her arms in the air and everyone was laughing. Maybe that's not.
That was exactly what was happening.
Dancing and farting.
You were making
everyone farts. Was like, come on.
I've never
seen her around. Look at her. Well, I probably had a couple of drinks.
Right.
Started asking some small questions.
And then it turned into the fart dance.
And
I'm like, man, Tig's a hit at this party. I'm going to keep sitting in the corner uncomfortable.
You know what I am? I can say about myself. I am.
And then say something about me.
I'm third.
I'm really good to invite to a wedding.
Oh.
I will get out and dance my sweaty face off all night. And I'm not somebody that goes out dancing. But if you're getting married,
You'll do it.
I'm here to dance.
Yes.
I'm here to have a great time, and I'm going to celebrate you.
Yeah. Will you talk to some old great aunts and stuff?
No.
Oh.
That's my cutoff.
Okay.
I'm so mad that I didn't go to your wedding, Tig. I think about it all the time that I should have been there.
It was a fun time.
I wish I was there.
You had a job in Colorado.
Yeah, I had to be in Denver. I had to do comedy. And after each show, I was thinking about how I should have been at your wedding. And I regret not going. But...
And this is the point where I say, Karen, I'm sorry I didn't invite you to my wedding.
I wouldn't have gone. I couldn't have gone.
It was a destination wedding.
What would you have thought if I sent you an invitation to my wedding? Would you have been like...
I would have been very touched.
Okay.
Because we... It's not how it is with us.
Yeah, because we just went to prom. Like,
yeah. And, I mean, I'm actually jealous and angry.
We text every now and then.
We do.
Maybe
and we're good
once
at it.
A year.
I think we should do it more because texting is a great kind of relationship continuer where you don't have to do bullshit like eat dinner together,
right.
But you can still be like, because when we were on our way and I'm like, the timing of this is getting weird, so I wanted to text Tig and I was going to text.
I'm so
which
glad
was hilariously a
so
second bl- after Chris texted me saying, that he's going to be at the audition another 30 minutes.
And then my phone shit.
And then
the
I
bed.
Said, I'm not going to be able to do this. And then you text and you're like, well, we're on our way to get you. And I was like,
well, there's no way out of this.
Thank God. But I didn't realize that exchange had happened. And I just was like, I just need her to know someone's, I've been the person that's standing outside going, well, I'm not sure what's going to happen now.
Sure.
So just like, we're on the way.
It's clearly why we don't usually.
Is there a turn? Okay, great.
We don't usually do the airport pickups anymore because it's just so congested.
It's impossible.
Lyft and Uber cars. It's just a mission.
Well, then I really appreciate you coming again.
That's all I'm wanting. In the episode that we lost, you talked about at your wedding, the people stopped traffic so you could run across the street.
Yeah. We got married in my hometown in Mississippi on the beach.
Past Christian.
And then the local police shut down the street for our family and friends to cross over to go to my cousin's house to celebrate. And you could see cars lined up.
And you thought they'd be upset. Because you're blocking traffic, basically.
Yeah, but everybody was cheering us on, and we were walking over to... All of our friends were like, gosh, what is a gay wedding in small-town Mississippi going
to
be like?
Yeah.
And it was so beautiful.
A valid concern.
Yeah, but people were coming out of their houses. It was 350 people were at our wedding, and they were coming out of their houses cheering. And then I turned to Stephanie and I said, they probably think I'm a man.
Young Tom Cruise got hitched
again. Now there's something to cheer for. A man and a woman married.
That's
in this day and age.
But it was so touching.
They were really coming out of their homes going, this is so wonderful. Congratulations. And,
just wearing their
beautiful.
Overalls.
Stephanie just sent a text. What is your ETA now? Just curious if I should take them upstairs and start getting ready for bed.
Pajama time. What are you going to say?
I'm going to say, who dis?
Oh, wow. What are we are doing? You, I like this aggressive side of you.
Right? Can. I mean, just look. No one has time. None of us have time.
No, you have family waiting for you. I have family waiting for me.
Steven's trying to start a family right now. He can't because he's
right
in
this second
goddamn car. Yeah.
When does this episode come out?
Monday.
Wow.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Quick turnaround.
So people will hopefully watch Under a Rock with Tig Notaro.
I will.
How do you watch it again?
You can watch it on Funny or Die or on Amazon Prime.
I like your interview style. I've seen you interview before. Didn't you have another interview thing where
I've
you were...
I've had many, yeah.
Where you were, like, interviewing Zach at a piano or something. What was that?
Oh, yeah, that was...
You have a long history of interviewing.
Yeah. And then I have a talk show every month at Largo called Tell Me Everything, and we really get into nothing.
What? I want to do it.
Please.
I want to watch it.
Yeah, it's like an hour and a half chit-chat, and that's just very different from... Under a Rock.
Because you know who you're talking to.
Yeah. I can recognize the person.
I've seen pictures of you.
You know, one of my favorite memories to date is when we were at the Benson Ball that year and your brother came and his dance team performed. Do you remember
that?
For the before the last
Now
like,
I have two brothers. One does not have a dance team.
Okay.
At all.
It's not a family-wide thing.
Renault does not have a dance
Renault.
Team. Renault.
Yeah.
I say Renault. I add a French accent to it. I hope he doesn't mind.
No,
I just
flexible.
Realized I've said it wrong to his face.
I think my brother's in love with Chris.
Mm. I feel love from him.
Yeah.
And it's mutual. I think he's the best.
But yeah, I have another brother that is a break dancer. And I remember what you said to me. It made me laugh so hard, Karen. We were watching my brother and his dance crew break dance their faces off.
Yep.
And I had just met my brother for the first time.
Right.
A few months before. And I had he lives in the D.C. area, and I invited him to bring his dance crew and open for me. And then I said, when I was on stage, I said, you know, when you're 40, whatever years old and you meet your brother for the first time and then you find out he's a break dancer.
You know, that normal situation.
You know? And then you find out he's really good. Well, I said something like the first time you're meeting him is the second time I've ever met him in my life.
I haven't met him then.
No.
I didn't see the breakdancing. This
was amazing.
It was amazing. And we were standing backstage crying.
Yes.
Yeah. And Karen turned to me and she goes, I feel like I'm watching one of those movies where the dance crew is trying to get to the stand-up show by the end of the movie, but it doesn't make sense. And it was so confusing, but everybody was like crying.
It was because it was the best and they were great.
They were so good. And it was just emotional in that I had just met my brother and.
And there was a feeling, I think, when you were introducing it, which is the funny part, where it kind of no one was sure how it was going to go. It truly could have been like your brother and his four loser friends that have been practicing in the garage. Like, I think there was the extra tension of this could be bad and we have to clap no matter what.
I had not seen them dance.
Yeah.
No. I was just like,
there was a total X factor.
Yeah.
And then... boom, it was like
they were like spinning each other on their heads.
It was beyond. It was beyond. It was the best.
There's nothing cooler than breakdancing. I love it so
much. Our wedding, Stephanie and I didn't want to do the whole first dance thing. And so we had my brother dance with Stephanie's friend Angela Trimber. They're both incredible dancers.
Yeah, she's a really good dancer.
And so they didn't plan anything. They just happened to be, you know, she represented Stephanie's world and my brother represented my world. And then they both just danced together. And that was our first dance. And that's what got everyone going. And it was really fun.
It's so good.
We're rolling up to my house.
Ooh. Thank you so much for being late for us.
Tig, this was great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
I was in such a panic, and then you were all in the car picking me up, and it felt great.
Chris, I brought this to you from my airplane.
Oh, thank you. How nice.
Beautiful.
It's a mini grooming kit.
Right.
So lovely.
Thank you. In a bulletproof container.
Right.
Thank you.
So watch Under a Rock with Tig Notaro and...
Star Trek.
And Star Trek.
It's Trek.
Star Trek. I always say Trek.
Yeah.
It's
you're
not.
Trekking through space.
Oh, yes, yes. You're not tracking
anything. And swing by Largo. I'm always there.
Yeah.
Once or twice a month.
It's a great place to see comedy. It's the best place in Los Angeles for comedy, in my opinion.
It was a joy to see you. Nice to meet you, sir.
Thank you so much.
Goodbye,
Thank you so much, Tig. It's good to see you.
This has been Do You Need a Ride?
D-Y-N.
A-R.
Are you leaving or are you on your way back home? Either way, we want to be there. Doesn't matter how much baggage you claim, give us a time and date. style. We wanna welcome you back home. Tell us all about it. Were you scared or was it fine?
Mouth horn.
With Karen and Chris.